Well, is Europe about to have a red wave, a conservative red wave, a series of elections taking place all across Europe? Will Europe move to the right? Is it already there? What are the implications of all of this? Let's ask academic researcher Ralph Schulhammer, who has his pulse on what is happening in politics all across Europe. And Ralph, welcome back to the show. Great to see you, my friend.
Great to be back. It's always an honor to be on with you.
So I want to talk about what's going on in Germany in just a second. We've seen blanket amnesty now for a lot of illegal immigrants, giving them citizenship. This could be the way to maybe hide the illegal immigration policy in Germany. We're seeing this in other countries as well. But you're seeing, I think, a real backlash right now to what's been happening in Europe over the past couple of years. And I think voters have just been fed up. What is happening to their countries? And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but we are starting to see a shift to the right. Here's the New York Times. You know it's bad because the New York Times has a front page story about this called Just How Dangerous is Europe's Rising Far Right? So is Europe turning far right, Ralph?
Well, I mean, you would have to ask who isn't far right these days. It seems that everybody who is slightly to the right of the Greens is either far right, the extreme right, the radical right. I recently read an article in The Guardian that I was counting whether they ever just say the right. No, it's only the far right, the extreme right, the radical right. It's like in the United States, right? They're not the Republicans, they're only the extreme, ultra, mega Republicans. There is nothing else left. But as you correctly point out, this is a sign of panic. And let me give you, just when we talk about Germany also, a quick example that shows you how panicked they are. One of the major candidates of the Liberal Party has recently bragged on social media that she's suing 200 people every year for defamation. So you have a politician who does nothing but going through the internet day after day after day, looking if anybody makes a joke about her. And if so, right, they go to the courts. And what that tells you is the very insecurity that is now kind of spreading throughout the establishment. Because I have this theory, I need to flesh out in greater detail at some point, but I have this theory that kind of the first sign that a regime is crumbling is if they can no longer take a joke, right? And you see this now. We had these odd cases in France as well, but particularly in Germany, where politicians of the Green Party were suing comedians because they dared to mock Germany's foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, who is basically a satirical one-woman show all on her own. I mean, it's very hard not to make jokes of her, or to put it differently, every interview she gives is like a stand-up comedy thing. And
yeah, we can talk about a few examples just later Just for some context here, Baerbock, of course, is the woman who said that she cares more about Ukrainians than she does about her own German voters. I mean, this is... That's who we're talking about here.
And it gets better. Just, I think, 24 hours ago, it has been reported in the news. I'm not sure if it's true. But apparently there are considerations to no longer elevate it, or let Ursula von der Leyen continue being the president of the European Commission, but to switch her for Annalena Baerbock. I mean, this would basically... It would at some point, and I say this very carefully because I don't want to be sued, right? But we are very close to really having the inmates run in the asylum. I mean, you literally have a politician who had one gaffe after the other. I think her most famous and dangerous one when she said during the UN General Assembly that Europe is at war with Russia. Like, there were all of a couple of these kind of things. And now you want to elevate that person to kind of the most important politician within the European Union. But again, these are elements of panic. And there's another element. If you would have asked me a week ago, is this conservative / European red wave going to come? I probably would have said, I'm afraid that when it comes to the actual voting, too many Europeans are going to say again, can I really give my vote to those, you know, right-wing radicals, which they are not, but this is how they are presented, right? And many people consume media on a day-to-day basis. They are not like you and I who are kind of permanently in the weeds and into the intrinsic details of this. It's people who work all day and then they read the newspaper. So, of course, they're influenced by this. But as lots of media have reported, like you had this German policeman who was stabbed by an Islamist and just a couple of hours, unfortunately, succumbed to his injuries and died. And I think we are now reaching the point where if something like that happens in one country, right, it's reported all over Europe. And I think that we are now going to see that people say, okay, it is enough, or we can no longer do this. It's either now or never. It's kind of an emergency break glass kind of situation. So I do believe that this red wave, whatever we're going to call it, is going to come. So after June 10th, it's going to be very interesting how the European establishment is going to react to this. But we already see what the reaction is potentially going to be. Ursula von der Leyen, whom I mentioned before, they are now talking about what they call pre-bunking misinformation. So right. It's no longer just about going against, you know, and I use scary quotes, disinformation, because very often disinformation is just information and facts that the establishment doesn't like. But now they have to reach the point where they basically, in a kind of thought crime approach, will already tell you what not to say before you say it. I mean, these are very, very dangerous developments. And we must kind of free ourselves from the idea that totalitarianism is only Hitler and Stalin, right? That the tyranny, if it's not jackboots smashing in your door at 4 a.m. in the morning, although if you look at the United States with the FBI, that does on occasion happen, but it's also kind of small, more capricious acts of tyranny. Like when they say, of course you can say whatever you want, but, you know, this is going to happen. Or, you know, we're gonna tell your employer. Like, I'm sure that some of your viewers and listeners have heard about the story about these rich kids on the German vacation spot who were singing, admittedly, you know, as some would, raucous and maybe not very polite song about foreigners. Again, not something that I would do. But like immediately their names, their addresses, their employers, like all of this was made public. So even something that, again, is stupid, no question, but immediately it goes to, we have to destroy these people's careers. And at the same time, just to make this last point, so you had this kind of 20-something year olds who sang a stupid song, right? They literally lost their jobs. One girl is very, very close to be kicked out of university, all these kind of things. So they showed their pictures, everything. But the guy who was stabbing people in Germany a couple of days ago, right? They pixeled his face. They didn't mention his name. So this shows that the establishment, and by the way, you see the same in the United Kingdom as well, where it's there is a double standard in policing. Being right of center puts you at much greater risk to catch the eye of the state than being left of center or being an Islamist. That is simply a fact. And one point that I mentioned in the intro, sorry for going on so long, but this is so crucial, because that's such an insane thing. So Germany told us, that Europeans told its citizens, that after 2015, don't worry, all these people that come to us, they will leave again. Like once the war is over, once the situation is safe again in their home countries, they're going to go. But as you pointed out, there have been 200,000 citizenships have been granted in Germany last year. 80,000 went to people from Syria. Right? How? Why? Like, it's the exact opposite. They were told, right, or the Germans were told, these people will leave. Now they make them into German citizens. And the really insidious thing is, of course, if one of those people now commits a crime, the newspapers will say, German man committed a crime. Of course, right, they just get prison. And it gets, let me, one last point, because it's so insane. At the there's like similar to the United States, there's kind of a little celebration when people get their citizenship, right? And in one case, one guy got the German passport from a female civil servant, from a female German public servant. And he refused to shake her hand because she's an infidel woman. But that is no longer grounds not to give people citizenship. So we're literally handing out citizenship to Islamists and think nothing about it.
I mean,
it's mad.
It is insane. It is insane. And so, and this is why they wanted to keep it quiet. This is why Germany wanted to keep this quiet, that they're just blanketly giving out citizenship to individuals. They don't want you to know about it. And this is how they get away with it. So when someone commits an act of violence, someone commits murder, they can say, yes, oh, that's a German citizen. Oh, really? Oh, that person just came from Syria, and just, you know, or this person came from Yemen, or this. And meanwhile, last week, of course, the United States and the UK just attacked Yemen's capital, right? So you wonder where all of these destabilized countries are pouring their citizenry into Europe. They're coming from these destabilized countries that the West decides to attack and destabilize on a regular basis. I mean, it's not surprising at all. And just a point of personal note here, I mean, I have family from Bavaria. So on my mom's side, going back, you know, just a few couple of generations, I was curious about German citizenship, just out of curiosity, what that looked like, you know, through bloodline and all of this, and just was curious, you know, and we were told absolutely not, like no way, you know, even though you're just a few generations removed from it, your grandmother came over from Bavaria, sorry, and I was like, oh, okay, I was just curious, you know, but here. Doesn't even matter. You could just be given blanket citizenship if you come from any of these countries now in order to hide this. It's stunning. But I want to get back to something you said about Ursula von der Leyen, which is, I guess it all kinds of, if we're having a red wave throughout Europe, does it even matter? Because when you have these unelected globalists who are in charge of Europe to begin with, it really doesn't matter which individual countries. Portugal just votes to you know, move to the right with the Chega party, moves more to the right, kind of throws out the socialists in part. Does it really even matter when at the head of it, you've got somebody like Ursula von der Leyen, people teaming up with the World Economic Forum, people teaming up with the World Health Organization? These unelected globalists are sort of running Europe anyway.
No, it does matter. And the reason why I think it does matter is because I think this is something we can learn from the left and all the people and groups you just described. Because what they have been doing over the last 30 to 40 years is that they said, yes, everything matters, right? It matters who is, running the universities. It matters who runs the media. It matters who runs the political parties. This is really something I believe in the past, in the broadest sense, the left has understood better than the right, that everything matters. Or as they would have said, right, everything is political. And we must not make the same mistake that we did in the past, that we say, does it really matter? Can there anything be done? It's a march through the institutions, every single element, every small step, be it in elections, be it in your local community, be it, the kind of media you consume, all of this, it all matters. I am worried as much as you are, and maybe we are fighting a lost battle. But I'm a happy warrior. So I say I'd rather stand on the right side and keep on fighting. And if we lose, I say at least we tried, but we shall not. We must not say it's all useless anyways. There's nothing we can do. Because don't forget one thing. Most politicians, and I think this is one of the reasons why we dislike them, most of them are opportunists. So currently for most of them, it is opportunistic kind of to listen to the globalist left, if you want to call them that. But at some point, and you see it like in the Netherlands gradually, right? You see it in Denmark, you see it in Sweden, and you see it even very, very slowly in Canada of all places, where politicians are changing tune because they are realizing, wait a moment, like there is something going on. I mean, some politicians are just so tone deaf, they don't get it. But there are some, again, the most radical opportunists, if you will, who say something is changing. So these pushes do make a difference. Will it change everything within a year or two? Probably not. But I mean, we are, if you excuse that expression, we are in a struggle for civilization. So that's going to be a marathon, not a sprint. So I would encourage everybody. I will do it. I hope that many of your listeners will do it. Go to the elections next week. I know it's frustrating. I think it doesn't matter, but it does matter. And even, this is what I always say, I said, even if you think it doesn't matter, any kind of right wave will give us the great pleasure to see the hysterics at The Economist, at The New York Times, at The Guardian, completely losing it. And that alone is worth it. Right? So even if it's just for the entertainment value.
Exactly. They'll label them MAGA extremists. Trump MAGA extremists are sweeping Europe. And I would love nothing more than to see that. I would love to see that in The New York Times, The Economist, and all of them. My guest has been Ralph Schollhammer. Always great to have Ralph here on the show. Where can people find all of your work, Ralph? I know you're very active on X and one of the smartest thinkers and writers out there.
Oh, that is so nice of you. I mean, ideally, just people. I think you also put it also in the chyron below. So if you follow me on X, you'll find everything. And please, to everyone, please feel free to reach out. I try to kind of with my small fan base, if I might use that expression in an unhumble and immodest way. I always like to interact with people. I think it's important that we all connect, that we kind of stick this out. I mean, this is a very, very important time. And as I always say, let us be happy warriors. I think change is possible, maybe slowly, maybe gradually, but let's not give up. And we see this especially what you do, Claire, right, and Natalie with Redacted. There is also an alternative media landscape emerging. And that allows us to see things like what happened with the stabbing in Germany that otherwise maybe we would have never have found out. It would have been a local news piece, maybe, German man, recently Germanized man stabs police officer. But now you can no longer do this. So again, let's support each other. If there are ways also to support Redacted, I'd ask everyone to please do it. This is a fight worth fighting.
Thank you. Yeah, well said. Well said. A fight worth fighting. And I too am a happy warrior in all of this. I'm a glass half full kind of person. So I believe we can affect change on this. Ralph, great to see you as always. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Clay.